Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. All we need is just a little patience. Addition, as we look back at the Bengals' biggest issues in their first two games of the year and look ahead to Sunday's game against another 0-2 team, the Philadelphia Eagles. Coming up, Dave Lapham joins me to discuss protecting Joe, connecting with AJ, and expecting a better pass rush. This week's one-on-one player interview is with Kevin Huber, whose goal 12 years ago was to punt until he was 35 years old. He's made it. So what's his goal now? And finally, it's our Know the Foe segment as we get an entertaining look at the Eagles from Michael Barkan, who hosts the team's pre- and post-game shows on NBC Sports Philadelphia. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Prime Sport, the official hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since that other pregame show. Since the Bengals played at 4 o'clock in Week 1 and on Thursday night in Week 2, I've had more time available on the first two Sunday mornings of the season than I do when the Bengals have their usual 1 o'clock kick. That's given me the chance to watch that other pregame show, which airs from 8 to noon every Sunday on CBS Sports Network. The cast includes host Adam Schein, former players Kyle Long and London Fletcher, and former Raiders executive Amy Trask, and is just the right mix of information and entertainment, without the painful fake laughs you have to endure on the traditional network pregame shows. So, check out that other pregame show, or TOPS for short, Sunday mornings on CBS Sports Network. Now, let's get to the Bengals, beginning with this week's breakdown with Dave Lapham. Lap, I think when the schedule came out and we looked at Week 3, a road game in Philly, most of us figured, all right, that's an L.
Right.
But not anymore. The Eagles struggled in their first two games worse than the Bengals did. They blew a 17-0 lead to Washington in Week 1, gave up 27 straight points and lost 27-17. Then they lost by 18 points to the Rams last week.
Yeah, I mean, they've been outscored 64-36, 26 points allowed in the fourth quarter. I mean, they've down the stretch, they've collapsed basically. And, you know, you think, okay, playoff team, more than not, on the road in Philadelphia, fans that boo Santa Claus when the schedule came out. Now, they don't look like the Philadelphia Eagles expected and anticipated, and there's going to be no fans in the stands. So it's going to be a much easier scenario to try to go steal a W in Philadelphia. I agree with you, Dan. I mean, I think right now the Eagles are doing a lot of things wrong. I mean, six giveaways, dead last in the NFL, -5 turnover ratio, dead last in the NFL. We think the Bengals have turnover issues. Man, Philadelphia, they got more turnovers than a bakery. Man, they're just producing them left and right.
Basically, one-third of the league so far is 0-2. 11 of the 32 teams are off to an 0-2 start. The Bengals lost their two games by a total of 8 points, and there's only one team with an 0-2 record with a smaller point differential, Denver. They lost their first two games by a total of 7 points. Should we be encouraged by that?
I guess you could be, you know, but people are going to compare the Cleveland Browns to the Pittsburgh Steelers, which who the Bengals played Cleveland and Denver played Pittsburgh, you know, in Week 2. I guess, you know, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, as the old saying goes. And like we've been saying for a while, 0-10 now. In two seasons, games decided by 8 points or less. NFL standard says win about half of them. They haven't won one of them. So it's a matter of learning how to finish or making plays at crucial times of football games are going to be a big factor in determining the outcome of the football game. You can't let an opportunity that when it presents itself just slip through your fingers and move on. That's coming back to bite them big time, there's no doubt.
The Bengals are giving up 185 rushing yards per game so far, third worst in the NFL. It would help, I would think, if Geno Atkins and Mike Daniels return this week, but neither one is practicing today.
And if I had to guess, I'd guess, you know, if the injuries are equal, Meaning that the groin injury wasn't a real severe one and it's going to take, like, you know, forever. And Geno's shoulder injury, whether it's rotator cuff or if it's labrum, whatever it is, it's not severe. I think probably have a better chance of Daniels coming back from a groin, you know, depending on the severity of the pull, a groin strain, a groin pull. I would think that Daniels may be able to make the dance in a better way than Geno Atkins would potentially. And maybe need another week or so for Geno. And, you know, again, they're day-to-day, week-to-week. But the fact that neither one of them practiced, you know, and when they came back with the extra practice time, today's injury report will have a big bearing on it. Wednesday is the big work day. Hopefully, at least one of them went limited. Maybe both went limited. But if I were to pick one that might have done something today, I'd probably gamble and pick Daniels over Atkins.
Let's talk offensive line. Pro Football Focus has the Bengals ranked 26th in pass blocking so far.
Who are the six teams that have done a worse job?
20th in run blocking so far. How has the O-line performed, in your opinion?
You know, it's been, I guess, spotty would be kind. I do think that Fred obviously had a couple of issues, but I do agree with Zach's comments that he didn't even have a full practice with any physicality to it before going in to play Thursday night against the Cleveland Browns. That's tough duty. It really is. I mean, you think, okay, you take some snaps at training camp. It was never really anything more than a scrimmage situation, you know, not live, not tackling people and everything, defense going 100 miles an hour with a bunch of different looks and adjustments you have to make. And he probably took more snaps at tackle initially when he was battling Bobby Hart than he did at guard. And I can speak from experience. Going from tackle to guard is easier physically because you have people on both sides of you. You have less space to worry about and not as athletic a player as you might see on the edge. So physically it might be easier, although they're behemoths. You know, you got to be strong inside. But, boy, it's fast in there. The traffic patterns are quicker. On the edge, no matter what, I found when I was playing all the different positions, every single assignment blocked the end. What if they do this? Block the end. If you're playing center or guard, they'll give you different looks. They'll bring linebackers. You know, there's a lot goes on. Double A gap blitzes, and it's quick. And, man, sometimes you feel like, you know, man, you're over the speed limit. These guys are really – you have to make quick decisions. So mentally, it's a big adjustment going from tackle to guard. Physically, it's not as much, although Fred got rocked, man, on that bull rush. He got rocked, and I was surprised. I thought that would not be happening to Fred if I were to pick anything that wouldn't happen to Fred, being the behemoth that he is. But it just goes to show you, if you're tentative at all in terms of what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it, and you have a high pad level, and I don't care if you're King Kong. You know, they're going to get under your pads and knock you around a little bit. So I think, you know, it was probably really, really quick for him mentally in there, and hopefully it slowed down a little bit because it's tough. And now you have, again, you're between the center and tackle. Neither one have worked with you in live conditions either. It's an issue. I mean, it's not as easy as people think. But the one thing I will say, Fred Taylor has untapped upside.
Fred Johnson.
I keep wanting to run the football. Fred Johnson has untapped upside. I mean, he is gargantuan, you know, and I do think if he does get his feet under him and start to feel real comfortable mentally, Michael Jordan and Fred Johnson could be, you know, a twin tower of strength inside at the guard position. He learned a couple things. He got bowled by one guy and got beaten upfield. Miles Garrett, you know, came upfield on him and got a quick rush and knocked the ball out of Joe Burrow's hand. So he had a couple of major negatives that were visible to everybody. But, boy, he needs reps. That's what he needs.
It has been announced that Fred Johnson will start again this week at right guard. But in the meantime, Alex Redmond was re-signed this week to the practice squad at least. What happens with him going forward, do you think?
I wonder if he gets activated, you know, to the two guys they bring up for 55. But I don't know if that would be an overload inside. You know, they get Calhoun. Let's see who else they have. They have
Billy
and Adeniji playing tackle and guard. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where Redmond, and I don't know exactly why he was terminated, waived, or cut, or whatever. I think it was because he keeps getting hurt. You know, he injured himself wrestling in the offseason and couldn't participate in training camp until the very end. And, you know, against Pittsburgh the year before in pregame warmups, blows his elbow out. It's like, man, you got to be kidding me. So they're wondering, I think, again, one of the best availabilities, one of the best abilities to have is availability, and he hasn't been available. So is it that? Is it other things? Is it a compilation of multiple? Who knows? But I do know one thing. When he is healthy, that is one finishing fool. He is the he is a strong guy that loves to fight you. He will battle you. He will finish you. He loves hand-to-hand combat. He's one of the best finishers, I think, in the league. I mean, the dude is like distraught if he doesn't dominate a guy at the end. He'll give him the rabbit punch. He'll give him the, you know, a little gut action. He'll do anything to, you know, finish guys. That's another issue. You don't want to be drawing penalties unnecessarily and all that sort of thing. But that guy wants to compete, man. He wants to finish. So I think he belongs in the National Football League. Just got to get everything right, everything calmed down, everything in place, and get healthy. See if he can contribute.
Alex Redmond, he is a little nutty, but he is lovable in his own brawling sort of way. According to the official league stats in Cleveland, the Browns sacked Joe Burrow 3 times and had 7 quarterback hits. And there's a common misconception that those are separate numbers.
Yes.
They're not.
Right.
It might be different for Pro Football Focus or Football Outsiders, but according to the official NFL stats,
right,
a sack counts as a quarterback hit.
And it should. You shouldn't get double credit for it if you're a defensive.
Right. So by official NFL stat keeping, he was hit 7 times in the Cleveland game. Now, that seemed low to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back and I watched the All-22 video. And there's another thing. If a quarterback gets rocked running the ball, that doesn't count as a quarterback hit. That's strictly the stat exists for pass rushing. So I included runs, and I counted up 11 times that Burrow was legitimately knocked to the ground,
mm-hmm.
some harder than others, in the Cleveland game. Is that sustainable for Joe Burrow?
I asked him that very question right after the game. You know, how you doing? Took some shots. I'm fine. You know, he feels like a football player when he gets hit. He says all the right things. But I don't want to see an Andrew Luck situation where, you know, you have a great player who just takes too many hits, whether they're because he's inflicting them a lot on himself, basically, by the manner in which he's playing, or the offensive line is not up to par. But bottom line is he took a ton of hits, and he said, that's enough. No mas. I'm done. Out of the game. Bright superstar. Out of the game. I don't want to see that. I definitely don't want to see that. Getting hit 11 times, solid contact 11 times, times 16 football games, adds up quickly. You're looking at 176 off the top of my head, 176 times during the course of the season. That's a lot of hits. That's a lot of and you got to hope that some of them was a direct hit to the head a couple of them were missed. There were shots to the head. And you start, you know, getting that done and start scrambling things upstairs, that's not good. You don't want to be in concussion protocol and everything that goes along with that. So, yeah, I mean, I'd like to see those decrease by at least 50% or maybe 75%. I mean, you're going to get hit, but you don't want to see your quarterback get hit, you know, more than a handful of times. You always want to see it less than a handful of times. But if you're throwing it 61 times, you're putting him at risk a hell of a lot more. That's usually 2 football games. You throw it 30, 31 times in a game, it's a lot of passes. Did it in one game. 2 times the normal, in one football game. Whew, that's a lot of throws, man.
In the Bengals' most recent game last Thursday in Cleveland, they threw it to A.J. Green a lot and didn't get much out of it. He was targeted 13 times, finished with just 3 catches for 29 yards. And going back to July, prior to training camp, I spoke to former Bengals wide receiver T.J. Hushmanzada, and I asked him this question about A.J. Green. A.J. Green turns 32 on the last day of the month. How much great football does he have left in him?
The way the game of football is now, like, honestly, AJ can play, if he stays healthy, he can play at a high level for 4 to 5 more years. High level. high level. And the game of football is different. Like, I'm 42. I have weighed the same for 20 years. I still in shape. I still have abs. I only work out a couple times a week. The game of football is different. If guys are staying in shape, AJ, in essence, his body should be healthy, if it's healthy, if that makes any sense, because he's been hurt for the last couple years. And so AJ's phenomenal, man. I tell people all the time, if you want to learn how to get off of press coverage, even if the release isn't a great release, it will be a great release by watching AJ. Like, AJ is just so violent at the line of scrimmage that even if it's not good, it's going to work because he believes in it. And yeah, I'm looking forward to AJ reminding people that he's AJ Green. I'm looking forward to that because he doesn't talk a lot. He's not going to hype himself up. And I don't even know AJ that well, but I'll hype him up. I'm looking forward to him reminding people how good he really is.
All right, again, that was TJ Hushmanzada back in July. I'm not going to panic over that last game for AJ Green. It was a short week, which I think was tough on him, considering the hamstring injury in training camp and the injuries he's coming back from before that. Additionally, Denzel Ward might be one of the top two or three cornerbacks in the NFL.
I was going to say, Dan, Denzel Ward did a great job. I can't remember a game where AJ was targeted 13 times and only had three catches.
There's never been one.
The 10 balls that he doesn't come up with? I mean, I can't. So I wonder if Darius Slay, who they picked up from Detroit, a three-time Pro Bowler, I wonder if they're going to put him on AJ all
Got
over the
to,
field.
Right?
All over the field. Like you know, Cleveland had Ward basically on AJ, and he's going to get – he's a Pro Bowler. He's going to get – if there's a Pro Bowler in the secondary, he's going to get him, you would think, unless, you know, they're so stubborn about, no, we're not going to travel corners. We're just going to play right and left corner. A.J. Green is the type of talent that might make your mind change a little bit, particularly when you look at the success that D.J. Ward had. He played he played him well. He played a good football game. And I think they're getting their hands on A.J. now. Hands are really, you know, it's a big, big deal. And the officials aren't really even – it's more than 5 yards down the field, and they're getting hands on him. It's not being called. And on the touchdown that was reversed – he was bear hugged, basically, coming off the line of scrimmage. Wasn't called.
In week one
against the Chargers. And then he did push off a little bit to get started because he was getting bear hugged, and he gets called. So you would think that a guy who's made 7 Pro Bowls might get a little bit of a benefit of a doubt. But right now he's not getting anything. He's really not getting much called. And there's some sticky coverage going on. There's some handsy stuff happening.
The Thursday night game in Cleveland, a special one for rookie wide receiver T. Higgins. He was targeted 6 times in that game and had his first 3 NFL catches. 3 catches for 35 yards, including an 18-yarder on a great throw by Joe Burrow into a very narrow window. In any case, here's the second-round pick out of Clemson on his first 2 NFL games.
Man, it's feeling like no other. You know, it's something I always dreamed of, and now I'm living my dream. You know, I just got to go out there and go out there and keep competing and go out there and get some W's now. So just like what Joe said not too long ago on Thursday night when he did his interview, I've never lost 2 in a row. You know, it's been a long time since I've done that. Last time I done that, I was playing basketball in high school. So, I mean, it's been a minute.
Hopefully he will not experience losing 3 games in a row. Let's talk, Lap, about the Bengals' use of their wide receivers, particularly in the Cleveland game. Tyler Boyd got the most snaps, 78. A.J. Green was in for 57, and you would expect him to get little breaks here and there
right.
since he's coming back from the injuries.
Right.
T. Higgins got the second most. He was in for 60, more than twice as many as John Ross, who was in for 28. Michael Thomas was in more than John Ross. He was in for 32 snaps. Auden Tate, inactive.
Yeah, that one's a tough one, and so you think Alex Erickson and Thomas will provide special teams plays, snaps, that Auden Tate isn't going to necessarily provide. I guess it came down to that in terms of who is going to be active for the game. But the snaps, I mean, it's a meritocracy. You know, there's no two ways about it. I mean, John Ross's production, you know, even though he's, quote, the third receiver as such, you know, I would think they'd have him no higher than number 3, he hasn't really produced. So it's a meritocracy. You got to produce. If you don't produce, your snaps are going to diminish. So T. Higgins, I mean, it's all about how you practice. It's all about, you know, what kind of rhythm and timing you're starting to see with Joe Burrow and some of these guys, because T. Higgins really didn't work much with Joe at training camp. A.J. obviously didn't. So John Ross didn't. So those guys are obviously getting in a better rhythm and timing with Joe Burrow than John Ross is. So it is. It's all about what you see, what the coaches see during practice, and meritocracy of, you know, who's going to be able to perform, who's going to be able to make plays. That's why the 10 balls that were intended for A.J. Green, for him not to come up with any of them, 13 targets, 3 catches is so un-A.J.-like. And there's probably, you know, multiple reasons for it. There's never just one reason, but that's got to change. You can't target your number one guy 13 times and only harvest 3 receptions for 30 yards, whatever it was.
I forgot to mention Alex Erickson when I ran down those snap counts, by the way. He had 8 snaps at wide receiver.
Right.
I don't want to be kill the play calling guy because Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan know a million more things about offense than I ever will. But I scratch my head that they are not finding something for John Ross to do. Jet sweeps.
Some sort of package.
Little short cross to try to take advantage of his speed. He really hasn't displayed the ability on a consistent basis to run way downfield and catch 40 or 50-yard throws. But can we get him the ball close to the line of scrimmage and see if he can run away from somebody?
I'll tell you, they better start figuring out a way to get big plays somehow, because they have one in each area. 23-yard touchdown on a quarterback draw from Joe Burrow, and one 23-yard pass, which was a touchdown to C.J. Uzomah. Those are the only splash plays of 20 yards more for the season. For the season. And we're talking, you know, quite a few plays. So you have to figure out some way to get some kind of, you know, burst, explosion, chunks. Got to get some of them going. They're chunkless. They don't have any chunk plays going on. Got to figure out a way. And looking at him, physically, fastest guy to ever run the 40 in the history of the National Football League. Yeah. I mean, some kind of, you know, little motion alley screen or something. I mean, when they have hit him on a slant, he split safeties and gone to the house. I mean, it's frustrating. It's frustrating when he's not used. It's frustrating to see him not execute when he is used. He may be as frustrating a Bengal player to watch as there's been in quite a while. He really is.
Prior to last year in training camp, it seemed like there was going to be somebody in jet sweep or fly sweep motion on almost every play. The 49ers do it a ton. Chiefs do it a lot. Rams do it a lot. We've seen it more in practice than we've seen it in games.
Yeah, and I mean, the 49ers, one of their touchdowns this past week, there was so much going on in terms of motion. They had 9 defensive players in a ball in the middle of the football field. And it was a walk-in, little short reverse touchdown run. But it had like 5 pieces of motion to it. It was like unbelievable. It's like, at this point, I can't trust my eyes. My eyes are deceiving me. My eyes are telling me this. My brain's telling me that. You know, it's like there's so much going on. I agree. And the running game, too. Where's the pin and pull? Joe Mixon was killing it with the pin and pull getting outside. I haven't seen much pin and pull. I haven't seen a whole lot of it. You know, I know in the second week in this game against Cleveland played against Baltimore. Baltimore's offense is so unique. They threw out the fronts and everything. I mean, they had Garrett in a 4-eye technique inside the offensive tackle, just blowing up the field to try to disrupt some of the running game. I mean, you're not going to do that. I mean, they're not going to line up like that against them. And they lined up in wide 7 and 9 techniques. So I can understand, you know, hammering the ball between the tackles. Some try to come downhill and pound them. But, man, I'd like to see some of that pin and pull that was – how many times did we see Joe Mixon, you know, timing it perfectly, letting his offensive lineman work, tight end pinning, tackle blocking down, center and guard pulling, they're getting their blocks. Man, it's good-looking stuff. Got to see it. Got to like to see that again.
It's interesting with Joe Mixon because it feels like he's not getting enough touches. He's averaging 20 a game.
He is.
15 carries, 5 catches a game,
he is.
Basically.
They're putting the ball in his hands. They are. Yep. They're just right now, they're not getting any explosives. Everything, I remember saying it multiple times because I'm thinking it again, and I remember saying it during the Thursday night game, root canal surgery. Every drive is like, man, you go on a 14-play drive for 41 yards. You don't even average 4 yards a play on their first drive and settle for a field goal. That's root canal surgery. I mean, man, Achevitz. You know, and the thing is, the Philadelphia Eagles, looking at their run defense, Dan, they're only allowing 3.6 a carry, seventh best in the NFL. They gave up a 40-yard run. Take that run away. They're 75 carries. So now 74 carries, 241 yards, 3.25 yards a rush. They're not an easy football team to run the ball on. This defensive line, Fletcher Cox, immovable object. I mean, I'm telling you, they got some guys. The guy that I see playing pretty well again is Malik Jackson. This dude, strong, explosive. You know, he's in a rotation of three defensive tackles. Telling you, not going to be easy street running the ball against these guys either.
You're not making me happy, Dave Lapham. Let's hit one more topic. After having two sacks in the opener, the Bengals did not have a sack or even a quarterback hit on Baker Mayfield. So, Carl Lawson, what's the problem with the pass rush?
We struggle to stop the run. You don't get that many attempts to just have drop back passes to get after the quarterback. So we got to fix that problem first. And then, you know, obviously we have talent and the pass rushers to go get the quarterback. But that's the narrative is, oh, you guys have struggled to get after the quarterback. But I'm like, when you're in third and short, or teams are doing play action boots and things of that nature, you don't really get that many drop back opportunities as you see. One of the best teams in the league, and that's on defense, is, you know, and then last year, the team that had the most sacks was, I think, Tampa Bay. They stopped the run first, and then they had the guys go get the quarterback. Pittsburgh did a good job of stopping the run. Then they get to go get the quarterback. So people know what we could do. People don't want to sit back and you've seen what happened at the end of last season. The pass rush picked up. That's because we were, you know, more sound and we started playing to get better against the run. So, but, you know, it's easy to go sit there and be a rider and be like, oh, the pass rush sucks. I mean, like, no, we got to stop the run first so we can get those people in the positions to do that.
I mean, Carl, how frustrating is it to have riders like us kind of knock the pass rush?
Oh, no, I mean, it's not frustrating. I mean, rants do every day. So, like, the narrative can change what you write in a day. Or this day you suck, next day you – I've had so many experiences that with media just talking – when I was at Auburn, just like trashing me, like about injuries or people on the fans talking to me. So, I mean, it doesn't really affect me at all. Like, this is your job. This is how you make your money. I'm not knocking you for your craft at all. It's not frustrating at all. But like you said, the narrative can change the next day. You know what I'm saying? The writings can change the next day. And guess whose job is that to do? That's us, you know? But until then, you're going to keep saying we suck. So, I mean, I'm not mad at you at all. Like, you're still my friend. We're cool.
I love that. I tell you what, Carl Lawson's got a pretty good grasp on how this works. You play lousy, we all say you stink. Yep. Turn it around the next day, and we're going to love you. But he's also right about the total inability to stop the run, making it impossible to get after the quarterback.
Had a high school coach, played offensive and defensive line in high school, and the high school coach, or my D-line coach, said, look, you have to make them – or we have to earn the right to rush the passer. It's not, they're not going to give you the right to earn the passer. You have to earn it, meaning control the running game, put them in bad down and distance situations, and get after the quarterback. It is that simple. It's very, very true. When you're giving up 185 a game on the ground, you're 30th in the NFL. Hard to pressure the quarterback. Plus, when Cleveland, they make Baker Mayfield out of pocket a bunch, changing the launch point. That's tough. You know, instead of a guy just being 7 to 9 yards away from the line of scrimmage, depending on the 5 or 7 step drop like a statue, the only guy they're going to play this year that plays like that is Phillip Rivers. Every other quarterback on their schedule has some movement skills. So they're only going to play against Phillip Rivers, who they know exactly where he's going to be every time he throws it, pretty much, one time. So you better start stopping the run and put them in third and long situations where these guys are going to at least be in the pocket for a while before they try to extend and create plays like every quarterback, including Joe Burrow, is doing for the Bengals. I mean, that's part of the quarterback package these days, is everybody's not Fran Tarkenton, but they want them to be more like Fran Tarkenton than Johnny U. They don't want him just standing in the pocket, you know, and throwing the football. That's not the NFL these days. So, Yeah, you're going to have to earn the right to rush the passer.
For the younger audience out there, Fran Tarkenton was the Russell Wilson of the 60s and 70s. Need proof? Google search Fran Tarkenton scrambling and watch some video on YouTube to see what I mean. One of the Bengals' best performers so far this season is kick returner Brandon Wilson. He leads the NFL with a 43.7-yard average on his three returns, and that's more than 10 yards better than anybody else in the league. And he's not the only standout on special teams. Kevin Huber is averaging more than 53 yards on his first eight punts. And I spoke to the Bengals' longest tenured player this week.
Kevin, I heard you say in a recent interview that your goal when you got into the NFL was to punt until you were 35 years old. You made it, but it sounds like you might have to update that goal.
Yeah. You know, when I first started, my goal was, you know, back when I was a young 20-something-year-old, I thought it'd be a pretty good milestone to play 12 to 35. So that was what I don't know why that number kind of came out, but that was my goal. So I reached that, and now you know, the next goal is to play till I'm 40. So a couple more years for that.
Your first punt of the year was a 70-yarder, and we're not talking about a bounce and roll 70-yarder. It flew about 62 yards from the line of scrimmage. Were you like, whoa, that felt good to start the year?
Yeah, it came off pretty good. Obviously, I like to have a better bounce keep out of the end zone, but you know, it was one of those things. It's, you know, no preseason games, just, you know, you just want to get a good hit on the ball to get the year off, started off right. So hang time could be better, but I was happy with the hit itself. And, you know, I'll take a 70-50, you know, all day long.
Yeah, 50 net after 70 gross, right? We're chatting with Kevin Huber. You're averaging 53.5 yards so far this year per punt. And I asked Aaron Simmons the other day, what's gotten into Kevin Huber? And he said he thinks the lack of OTAs and mini camps might have helped. Do you agree?
It was kind of like the lockout year where you just kind of get ready for the season. You know, you just, instead of getting ready to go for OTAs and, you know, and then you kind of calm down in the summer and then pick back up in training camp. It's just, you know, I just kind of took this year and I didn't really rush anything. I just let it build up until we got to training camp. And that way, by the season, I was ready to go. So I think I was probably more fresh coming into the year than I've ever been in the past. And just really took it slower this year, knowing that, you know, we weren't going to have, you know, all the games. So just really just took some more time, probably lifted more this year than I ever have before, just because I had more time to do that. And just really got myself ready for week one versus ready for OTAs and ready for training camp.
How do you think your leg strength compares at 35 to when you broke into the league 12 years ago?
It's probably, you know, I think it's probably just as, you know, just strong as it was then. I've had a couple of years where I was probably stronger than I am now, but I think overall I'm probably, you know, a much similar, you know, strength than I was when I first came out. I think now I just know how to utilize it better and get more out of it than I did then. I think my form and my technique and just knowledge of the game and what I need out of a certain situation has really changed, which has helped me to, you know, use leg strength when I need it, but also be able to back off when I need to as well.
Kevin, as the holder, you were obviously the closest person to Randy Bullock when he missed his game tying attempt in week one. Could you tell what happened right away?
I just knew that the hit sounded different. You know, I don't get to see the ball flight. I get to see like the aftermath. I just knew, you know, the ball, it just, there wasn't the same kind of thud. So I knew something had happened. And then once I looked up and saw that he was grabbing his leg, I didn't know if he had pulled something, tore something. I had no idea what was going on. So, you know, it felt so bad for him. But I know he'll, you know, he came back last week and had a great game. And, you know, he's been, you know, more committed now than, you know, than I've ever seen him before to, you know, kind of to get back to, you know, what we know we can do. And, you know, I think he showed that last week in our last game, and he made all of his kicks, had great kickoffs, and I'm pretty confident he'll be able to do that the rest of the year.
A couple more questions for punter Kevin Huber. Darren Simmons had his contract run out at the end of last season, and Lapp and I both thought that there was a decent chance he would move on to another team. How happy were you when the Bengals were able to retain him?
Yeah, I think that was huge. You know, I think he's a great coach. I think he's probably the best coach in the NFL, special teams-wise. And the fact that we have him is huge. And, you know, he's able to help me individually with punting because he's punted in the past. But I like it better for how he can get the other guys ready for a game. And, you know, for me in specific is the punt protection guys. He's dealt the short end of the stick, you know, week in and week out because he's the last guy to know who's going to get activated or inactivated. So he's got to get every guy ready. And, you know, there's no look that our guys haven't seen going into a game. And that's a lot of confidence for me knowing that, you know, whatever a team throws at us, our guys are going to protect it. So the fact that he got signed back and, you know, he's now here, however more, two or three more years, whatever that is, that's huge. And that was a big confidence thing for me as well to be able to, you know, going into the season knowing that, you know, no matter who we have on the team, they're going to be ready to go.
So going full circle back to the start of the interview, if the goal now is to punt until you are 40, hopefully that'll be the case. But have you given much thought to what you're going to do when you are no longer punting in the NFL?
I actually got asked that question, I think it was last night or yesterday or something like that. I always think about that, but it's always, you know, it changes from year to year and, you know, from day to day is what interests me. I really like the real estate field. What part of real estate I would get into, I'm not really sure. But I'm not really like, you know, dialed in on one thing. Kind of if something comes my way that interests me, I'll pursue it. But no real like set plans right now, just something comes my way and I like it, I'll try it out.
Keep blasting away and you don't have to worry about it for a few more years.
Well, that's the goal.
Hey, congratulations on a great start. I appreciate your time. Best of luck this week against the Eagles.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Now time to turn our attention to this week's opponent, the 0-2 Philadelphia Eagles. Michael Barkan hosts the Eagles pre- and post-game shows on NBC Sports Philadelphia, and he joined Lapp and me this week on the Bengals Game Plan Show. Here in Cincinnati, an 0-2 start is being seen as, well, it's Burrow's rookie year. There are bound to be some growing pains. How is an 0-2 start being received in the city of brotherly love?
Well, it's as you might expect, you know, in fact, and I don't know if Fox did this or if the Eagles did it. I'm hoping it was Fox. But if you watched any of the game, you heard the birds running off the field after one of several miscues. And I'm being kind saying several. And you heard boos if you were watching the telecast.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, are they booing them in their own stadium with no fans? people think the season is on the brink, even at 0-2. And with the Bengals coming up, and you know, anything can happen on Sunday. There's no reason the Bengals can't get win number one. And then they've got to fly and play San Francisco. They got Dallas in the first eight. It's going to be a real uphill battle for the Eagles from here on out. They should have blasted Washington in that first game, and they had every opportunity to beat the Rams as well, as good as the Rams are. And it was their own miscues. It was their own sloppy play. It was their own poor play calling. And I don't know if that improves in week number three. I just don't. What do you guys think?
You know, I'm looking at Wentz, and he gets sacked five times in the first 25 plays against the Redskins. And yeah. that changes your clock a little bit. It altered his clock. Now, to me, it looks like he's pressing, and he's become a turnover machine. Five giveaways, most in the NFL, six by the team. He's responsible for five of them, four interceptions and a lost fumble. I mean, the dude is just – now he wants to get it out of his hands so quickly. His mechanics have fallen apart, his, you know, his form. I mean, he looks like he's definitely, you know, definitely struggling. I don't know if it's something that can be remedied by, you know, one good game against a team that's struggling as well against the Bengals. But, man, he looks like a different guy to me right now.
Yeah, I don't know if it could be remedied, Dave, although it did happen in some semblance last year, and then he led the team the last four games to the playoffs, and then he got knocked out against Seattle, unfortunately. I think all of that has to, in some sense, form who you are as a quarterback. He's just getting blasted physically, but also he continues to give up his body, as the hockey guys say, and I don't think that's a good idea. I think he needs to be more careful. And this week, week number two, you saw what happened week one with the sacks. But week number two, the line protected him, and it's his inaccuracy, as you spoke of. He's not throwing the ball and placing it where it needs to go. And there was one play in particular to Dallas Goedert. Goddard's wide open. He throws behind him on his back shoulder, and Goddard almost got blasted. There are a couple other plays like that. The same with DeSean Jackson. In fact, Jackson didn't have a catch in the first half and then comes back and leads the team in receptions with six. But it's something I really go back to the departure of Frank Reich, who's now with Indianapolis, and John DeFilippo, who was the quarterback's coach. And I think sometimes, and Dan, you could, or Dave, you could speak more to this better than I, but sometimes there's just a chemistry between coach and player. There's a comfort zone, and there's an ability to make the player understand better than when with other coaches.
Yep.
And whatever it is, this chemistry now with Press Taylor, who's really the de facto offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach, and Doug Peterson, and this word from the locker room that perhaps, you know, Wentz doesn't always listen to the play call and that he calls the plays that he wants to call, and I don't know if Peterson's on board with that. So there's a whole bunch of tumult going on right now, but I really think it started with that, with the departure of Reich and DeFilippo after that Super Bowl.
We're talking to Eagles pregame and postgame host Michael Barkan. We know the Eagles have had injuries on the O-line. How is the group that they have now? Okay, below average? How would you consider these guys?
I think it's okay. You know, it's so easy to just say, oh, these guys can't play. I mean, you know, they're not Jason Peters on the left side. It's not Lane Johnson. And even Jason Peters isn't Jason Peters anymore. But I think this line is all right. You know, they still have Peters, still have Kelsey. Peters has not been a major issue as old as he is. I think he came back in good shape, and I think he's all right. They've got this rookie at right guard, Nate Herbig, and then Lane Johnson, who missed the first game. But Jack Driscoll, this rookie, came in, and he was okay for Lane Johnson the first week. It wasn't because of him that they got all those sacks. And Johnson comes back in at right tackle, and the line kept Carson Wentz clean. So I don't think there's an issue there. I think there is an issue with the tight end, Zach Ertz, the all-pro tight end. He's not getting the ball very much. And as you may have heard, he's complained about his contract situation. And he's expressed that he's unsure that the Eagles want him to finish his career in Philadelphia. Well, maybe they don't. I don't know. But don't cry about it. Start catching some balls. Maybe he'll even get a new deal. He's got a contract, by the way. That always, you know, I'm sure, Dave, you got to love that in the era in which you played.
Yes.
You know, you got a contract and pays you pretty good money.
Right.
Finish the darn thing off, you know. I know you're Zach Ertz. And then Dallas Goedert, honest to goodness, who was drafted a couple of years ago, and a lot of people raised their eyebrows because we thought, man, they got a top flight tight end. You bring in another one, and then sometimes it looks like he just doesn't know what the plays are. Sometimes he's yelling back to Wentz, like, do I go here? Is it over here? So that's a problem, but he is a physical specimen. But I'd like to see Ertz get the ball a little bit more. And then there's Doug Peterson, who I don't know if you've heard or seen, is kind of like his mentor, Andy Reid, who got his first trophy, which is nice because he was beloved in this town. But he doesn't run the ball. And he doesn't run the ball. Then they get their brains beat in. Then he runs the ball, and usually that'll send him back to a more 50-50. No, it's never 50-50, but to a more 50-50 type of offense. And they still lost against the Rams. But I think that had more to do with Carson Wentz and his inaccuracy and his throwing into double coverage. And I don't know what's going on with him right now, but they got to figure it out quickly.
You know, let's flip to the other side of the ball, Jim Schwartz. I mean, defensively, he's the kind of guy that he doesn't want to blitz all that much. He wants to rush four, drop seven, have four really good rush guys. They don't even really twist and stunt all that much. He just wants to overpower you with good players in the pass rush and then play good sound defense on the back end. That's what it looks like he's doing in the early stages here. And, shoot, they're top 10 in yards allowed, yards per play. They're seventh. I mean, they're fifth in yards passing allowed. Has it just been bad field position because of the turnovers?
I think that's the way it was in week number one, and I guess to some sense week number two. But these guys, there was one play at the end of the game last week where Josh Sweat is kind of spying Jared Goff. and Goff's out there, and Sweat's just kind of jogging, like, he's not going to run. He's not going to run. And like, oh, my goodness, he ran. And then he's too late, and Goff ends up picking up 6 yards. And so I think these guys need a wake-up call. Brandon Graham, how about trying to, you know, set an edge for everybody? Fletcher Cox has not been what he can be. He's not been his Pro Bowl self. But the other thing is, Dave, they've got linebackers that should be safeties or corners. Nathan Gary, he's hand tackling guys. He's undersized. And the Eagles have long believed, indeed, if not by stated intent, they have long believed that the linebackers really don't have a big place in the defense. And so they have these linebackers that really are not, you know, they're either playing out of position or they're just not as good as they need to be. Malcolm Jenkins, they let go to the Saints, as you know, and then they moved Jalen Mills, who was a corner, and he was an okay corner, but they moved him to strong safety. Rodney McLeod's a free safety, and then they brought in Darius Slay from Detroit, and that was an upgrade. And Cravon LeBlanc is out there as the nickelback with Avante Maddox as the right corner. It has not worked. They've looked really bad, and with regard to Jim Schwartz, I guess the bottom line is, does your team have more points than the other team when the clock hits zero? Right. But Schwartz gives up tons of yards all the time and tons of points. And everybody kind of glosses over it because they went to the Super Bowl in 18. And then, you know, 19, Wentz is hurt all season. There's always an excuse. But to me, Schwartz's defenses give up way too much yards and points. And that's the bottom line.
Our guest is Michael Barkan, Eagles pregame, postgame host on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Here's my last question, Michael. You mentioned Jalen Hurts. To me, that was a curious draft pick. You've got Carson Wentz, second overall pick in the draft, MVP candidate before he got hurt a few years ago. Did you find it strange that they selected a quarterback in the second round with the other needs they have on the roster?
Dan, I think the entire NFL establishment found it strange that you take a guy with the 53rd overall pick when you've got a Pro Bowl quarterback and a guy who, were it not for an injury in his second year, would have likely won the MVP. I think everybody thought it was bizarre. And then last week, I don't know if you know this, excuse me, he had been inactive in week one, and Nate Sudfeld had been the number two. Sudfeld was inactive in week two, and Hurts was the number two QB. And then he was in there for a couple of snaps. They put him out at wide receiver. But at some point, you got to ask yourself, if this is the guy that you know you're going to use him and you're going to use him as a decoy, you have to use him at some point, don't you? I mean, you have to. Otherwise, the defense is just going to say, "Yeah, they put him in there every play. They never go to him." So at some point, he's going to have to get the ball, whether it's under center or whether it's a pass from Wentz or it's a wildcat formation. But that is the you start getting into the weeds with this, and you can go all day because that Howie Roseman is the general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles, and a lot of people question that selection. They've questioned many of his selections through the years. And you may recall that when Chip Kelly came in, they spent 1 year together. And then Chip basically said, either that guy goes or I go. And at that point, everyone thought Chip was still a genius. So Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, said, yeah, okay, we're going to put you, Howie, at the end of the hall and stay out of Chip's way. And then they brought him back when they fired Chip. And how he was celebrated after they won the Super Bowl. And he has had some good drafts, but I think a lot of them have been wasted drafts. And I don't mean just at the number one pick. I mean entire drafts. And so I don't know that happens with top-flight GMs and top-flight teams that are there every single year. The most important position, in my opinion, I'd love to hear your guys on this, the most important position in any organization is the guy picking the talent. Mm-hmm. Because, you can be inferior at coach and you can have some players that are a little off, but the guy who's selecting your talent needs to know what talent is. And I question that at times with Howie. I really do.
I was going to say play-by-play guy is most important, followed closely by the person picking the talent.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Dan.
I think you're right, though. I mean, I'm expecting a Hurts package. you know, gadget gimmick stuff. When you're struggling, you got to come up with something. I think they are going to come up. One final question. Thanks for carving all the
time. I'm yours. Are you kidding me?
All right.
We're three Syracuse guys.
I know.
We're on Marshall Street right now.
There we go. M Street. I love it. Get a little slice. All right. So I thought the Bengals were having a hard time finishing. The Philadelphia Eagles have scored 3 points in the second half in two football games. They've been outscored 36-3. No, they've been shut out in the third quarter, 3 points in the fourth quarter. I mean, my goodness. Talk about not finishing. What's up?
I think that's Peterson, and I always thought a strength of his was the adjustment at halftime, thinking, well, it's not going to get worse. They're not going to double up on the score, or they're not going to fail to score. But that's what's happened, Dave. That's exactly what's happened.
Wow.
And I think there's some kind of communications gap going on with Peterson and Wentz. I don't know what that is. And I think the defense is just they need to get kicked in the butt. They really do. And Jim Schwartz, to me, this is a defining game for him. But you could if I could have one more question, what are you making of the Bengals offense? Joe Burrow. I saw what happened. How he threw away game number one, which was a shame. He's a rookie with that little shovel pass that got picked off. I don't know what happened last week, but what do you make of this guy in this offense?
Well, he was 37-61 in week two. He set
61 passes.
Only 61. Yeah. Second most ever by a rookie, and he had the most completions by a rookie. I think he's cut from a good cloth. He's got some fiber to him. He's the real deal. He's far from their biggest problem. That's for sure.
And after the interception that you referenced in week one, he threw a game-winning touchdown pass with 7 seconds to go that got wiped out by a semi-bogus call.
Right.
So he bounced back nicely from that.
That's the thing about him. He has a short memory. You know, he moves on. He compartmentalizes. He doesn't let one bad play turn into multiples. I mean, he's pretty sharp. He's a mature guy. Very mature. Very patient. I think he's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah. Well, I love watching him play at LSU, and I love the sensibility. I love when he came and had Burrow spell with an EAU X, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him play.
He gets it.
We'll have much more on the game this Friday on the Bengals Pep Rally Show from 3 to 6 on ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati, online at ESPN1530.com, or on the iHeartRadio app by searching for ESPN 1530. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Prime Sport, the official hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.